Here we are in San Luis Obispo with Scott Collins. Scott, last time I saw you, you were working for the city of Morro Bay.
Right.
And you have a whole new life now.
It's a big change from 2023. Now we're here in 2024 working on housing.
What's your position?
I'm the executive director for the Housing Authority of San Luis Obispo County. So we provide housing to folks who are on the low income end of the spectrum.
Would that include Section 8?
That is correct, yeah. Now, that was like the old term. It's called Housing Choice Voucher, but for most people, Section 8 rings a bell. So we provide vouchers to about 3,000 families in our county.
What does that do for them?
So what that does is it gets them to that elusive gold standard of paying 30% of your income towards your housing cost. That used to be an achievable target. It's becoming harder and harder to achieve for all income levels, particularly those at the low income. So we provide a subsidy through the federal government whereby the individual has a voucher, never pays more than 30% of their income. So if they make $1,000 a month, they're paying $300 for rent. It may cost $2,000 a month.
But right? Utilities on top of that?
They usually get a discount on utilities. So it really helps stabilize families, seniors, veterans.
These are people that were marginalized right on the edge of going unhoused, as they say today.
That's right. We have a lot of people in our community who are eligible for this service, but we are restricted by the number of vouchers we can provide based on the federal government's budget. We'd love to offer more, but we are very efficient in the allocation we're provided and proud of the fact that we serve 3,000 families now. For every one family that has one, there's probably four or five who are also eligible but can't get one. That's where we look to other partners, but folks do fall through the cracks, and that's why people are sometimes mystified by how much money is being spent to address homelessness, yet the numbers either are stagnant or get worse. It's because more and more people fall into it than we're able to help get out of.
Somebody in your industry the other day was talking about the cost to manage and deal with a homeless person is more than to house them.
Correct.
That's really interesting.
It really is. You think about somebody living on the street. I know we're talking more about affordable housing, but there's a connection. Based on my prior work as a city manager, working with police departments and fire departments, hospitals, et cetera, the cost of the system of somebody being unhoused is significant, far more than the subsidy that we provide or that shelters provide or interim housers provide or subsidies that keep people from falling into homelessness. It's far better to get ahead of it upstream.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Looking forward, if you could paint your own picture and you had a bag of money and you could allocate it anywhere, free will, what would you do? Right.
Well, I think there's money and then there's policy. On the money side, I think trying to find that balance between the shelter services and interim housing, because not everybody's ready to go right into housing. To get people stabilized, we need them to be off the streets. So making sure you have enough money there, but then really thinking about the long-term play that we want people to be permanently housed, then you need to have enough units. So making sure there's money spent there, because what we're finding in some parts of the state, other places in the United States, is that you have shelters, but you have no permanent housing. Mm-hmm. So they're sort of held forever.
Kind of warehoused.
Yeah. And it's not a long-term solution by any means. So I think, again, also putting money in preserving housing and keeping people housed, a dollar spent there is significantly better than the money that you'd have to spend to keep somebody in a shelter. And I know police departments and fire departments would much rather spend their resources on addressing crime or other life safety issues than some of these quality of life issues.
I think it's Reno and a couple other places have been very successful at their housing, at creating little tiny houses. Talk to us about that big picture and how you might apply that here.
Tiny homes, villages, things like that have been proven to be successful, particularly in transitional housing where, you want somebody out of a congregate shelter so they can have their own unit, begin to kind of get their life together, work with case managers to get Social Security or other benefits, also prepare for work or get their children back in their lives if they've had drug abuse issues or mental health issues. All those things become easier to deal with when somebody has their own space. But those aren't meant to be permanent,
mm-hmm.
but they can serve as a nice bridge, right? And so there's projects in South County, and then another one just got approved by the Board of Supervisors up here in San Luis Obispo for something very much like that, like Cabins for Change, for instance, down in River Beach.
There's okay.
20 or 30 units there, and it's prefabricated, much more cost effective than, you know, building brick and mortar,
yeah.
but it's not meant to last forever, of course. Yeah. And then a similar approach being proposed up here on Bishop and Johnson by the county facilities there to do both transitional and permanent housing. And developers or service providers come to us to provide vouchers for those permanent units to mm-hmm. help provide the services, because you do need to pay staff at the end of the day to help these folks. Getting them housed is key, especially if they have some acute issues like drug abuse or alcoholism, but they still need services after they're housed to begin to address those issues.
Let's look at the county broad picture. Are there pockets in the county where there's a preponderance of homeless, or is it kind of equally distributed?
I wouldn't know all the data exactly, but I would say there's a mix between North Central and South County. And thankfully, there are agencies working in each of those locales. And the coordination is getting better with the county, the Homeless Services Division, which is a new thing that was started a few years ago. It was birthed after the adoption of their 5-year plan to address homelessness. So there's better coordination between the service partners, but also getting a data system in place so you sort of know where people are before. It was, these systems would not talk to each other, so you could have people on 5 or 6 different lists and a lot of confusion, and it's hard to track mm-hmm. outcomes, right? Which we know how important that is when we're spending, you know, millions of dollars of taxpayers' money. So those things are all getting better, which is great. But I would say it's kind of equally placed throughout the county, the mm-hmm. homelessness issue. But it's great to see the county taking leadership.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Go back to broad brush scope of your mission here, mm-hmm. the Housing Authority, priorities and
right.
the breadth of what you guys do here.
Yeah, so the two main focus areas for us are the voucher program, which I mentioned earlier. That's allocated from the Housing and Urban Development Department of the federal government, or HUD for short.
And how do you connect with the recipient for the vouchers?
So we have a cadre of staff that you walked by when you came into our offices who are housing specialists. So they work with people who have applied and have been lucky enough to been selected through the lottery system. And then you begin the process of income verification. That's the key piece, right? That your income qualified. If you make more than typically 50% or 60% of the area median income, then you're not qualified for housing. That's our main target areas, those who are in that 50% or below. And then once we've verified their income, then they have a voucher by which they can go onto the private market and work with landlords to try to find a place to live. We spend a lot of time building relationships with landlords, because without them, we can't make the system go. We have sister agencies in other parts of the state, won't name names, but where they're only able to maybe execute about 80% of their vouchers. So 20% is left on the table.
And why?
Because they can't get takers. Right?
Interesting.
Because there's still, for some, a stigma attached with Section 8.
So there's resistance.
Right. And the state is trying to leapfrog in front of that and help create regulations that reduce discrimination, but this still happens, right? Mm-hmm. So onus is on us as a housing authority to build those relationships. The partnership or the linkage is between the tenant and the landlord. We don't intervene. But if there are issues, landlord reaches out to us. We have case managers to try to help assist our tenants if they're having episodic issues with, you know, mental health or other issues. But
you guys have outreach? Or you leave the headquarters and go out in the field?
Yeah. Yeah, we have resident services which is the other part of our house, is the projects that we own and operate that help. But then we have case managers who are here to assist those clients who are maybe working with an individual landlord and may have issues. We do our best to help them. We also partner with CAPSLO, ECHO of North County, Five Cities Homeless Coalition, with them to help get some of their clients into our voucher system. VA, a big connection there for veterans. So all working together to kind of address the same issues. The other part of what we do is we build and operate affordable housing projects. So that's a...
So actual construction.
Yeah, actual construction.
Under your umbrella.
Yeah, becomes part of our ownership under our nonprofit.
Give us a word picture of where it would be, what it would be.
The big project, there's many underway now, but the one big project underway is the Anderson Hotel, which is downtown San Luis Obispo.
That's a major building.
Yeah. It was a hotel for the stars back in the day. It's a 100-year-old building. The 60s, 70s, it sort of lost its luster, and then they began working with us, leasing the building for low-income housing.
So it could be the whole breadth. It could be a senior.
Right, anyone.
Any disability.
Right. Exactly. Hmm. But, you know, a few years ago, the owner was considering selling the hotel to a private hotel developer to, I think, tear down or maybe renovate. I'm not exactly sure. But
how did you... Was it right time, right place?
I think it was. A lot of factors in play. It was middle of COVID. It was right after the federal government, Congress, had passed the ARPA, which was the American Rescue Act. They were flush with cash. The state was investing in money into individual care, individual units for homeless to get away from congregate care because of the concern of the spread of COVID-19.
What will be the population?
So there'll be 66 units, and we're targeting primarily homeless or formerly homeless individuals or those who are at risk. That's a permanent deal.
And the units would be like the SRO, single room.
They're either studios or one bedroom.
But they have each have their own bathroom.
Right.
And how about cooking?
Everything. All soup and nuts.
Self-contained.
Yeah. We usually can't place people into anything less than that.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that's when you fall back into that temporary or transitional. So this is permanent housing. And then we have case managers who will work with this population, plus our maintenance and property manager who will live on site. It looks like a typical apartment, but then we're also connecting a lot of these folks to services.
Ancillary services that could be ideally on site.
Right.
Is that going to happen?
It's for these folks only. So it's not a shelter. Yeah, I don't want to put that out there. It's not a magnet for other folks. It's literally for those on site only, but we would have partnerships, for instance, with Slo Food Bank or County DSS or alcohol treatment or, you know, AAA or all those kind of things we would bring on site. So Social Security, like we have a list of 2 pages of folks that we help connect people to.
A lot of that's just practicality. They don't have cars necessarily.
Right. But we have people who were part of that population that we temporarily moved them into other facilities. And most of them who have the option want to come back because they like that freedom of being able to get around downtown. You know, it's a pretty cool place to live. And the building looks amazing. I don't know if you've seen it recently.
Walked by it a week ago. It looks like you're getting close.
We're really close.
What's an ETA for grand opening?
Well, we hope to get people in September and then, you know, some kind of grand opening ceremony in October. But this was one of those projects, back to your question, that sort of came together at the right time. You had Congressman Carbajal coming in saying, hey, how can I help? Let me see what kind of money I can provide. You had the state stepping in, you had the city and the county, and they all asked Haslow to intervene so that this could be maintained as permanent supportive housing.
That's really cool.
Yeah, really cool.
Yeah. Home run on that one.
Very much, but a very challenging project all the same, and it's nice to see it done.
So looking forward, that's all up and running in the future. Then what? What do you have your eyes on? Where do you go from there?
Let's see. We have about 3 or 4 other projects underway. We have the old Maxine Lewis site, which was the home to the first emergency shelter in San Luis Obispo.
Oh, yeah, the old,
the
kind of Victorian-era house.
So that house will be maintained.
What is it right now?
Well, it was kind of storage, different odds and ends. It was our property, so we sort of kept things odds and ends there, but that house will remain, but then we're building 40 units of permanent supportive housing.
Little bungalows?
It'll be a standard apartment. two-story, but it will house those who are homeless or formerly homeless or at risk. Mm-hmm. And then we have a family project on Bridge Street, which is over that way. Listeners can't see me pointing, but you know, it's in San Luis Obispo, just trust me. And that's a 31 unit for families. We have a project completing in Pismo Beach or Shell Beach. That's a 24 unit senior facility. One of the things that I learned, which was eye-opening, I think we all sort of have our idea of what homelessness looks like, but the fastest growing demographic of homeless folks in our state and in our county is our seniors. And that's, you know, sort of look at the math, it makes sense. A lot of folks are retiring with Social Security or less than, and that's simply not enough to pay rent.
Well, and then you have the escalating cost of housing.
Right, on top of it.
Yeah, I did some work with Society of St. Vincent de Paul, went down to their homeless shelter, Skid Row. And at that time, he was saying, we've had a 20% growth in our homeless population just in the last 12 months, and the primary reason were the Orange County landlords jacking rents. Mm-hmm. They were right on the edge, and that pushed them out, and that was the sole reason why they became homeless.
Right.
Wow.
Right, and that's where people are, you know, building shelters is important, but some folks are looking, well, geez, you know, if you had 500 people, in this case, I don't know how many were evicted. Now imagine if instead of spending $10,000 or $20,000 a year for them to be housed in a shelter, maybe you give them $1,000 a year to make that difference up in their rent.
Right.
Right. Like,
so they don't become homeless.
Just look at the cost differential, right? Like, mm-hmm. It's far more efficient. But I think we still have this notion that people shouldn't be given money because they're going to use it on drugs or whatever. Yeah. But there are a lot of experiments being run throughout our state and the country on that kind of guaranteed income piece that mm-hmm. is early results are showing that people are just using it for necessities and they're staying out of homelessness. So it's saving the system a significant amount.
So it works.
Yeah. But again, early stages, and there's a lot more work to be done, the research. But yeah, like I said, we have a lot of projects we're working on. We completed one in Morro Bay.
Oh, yeah. I was going to ask you about that. It's really cool. There's kind of delay and moving. What happened there?
Project was tricky to begin with. I was working for the city when it was approved. But when construction began, or before, we knew there was challenges, cultural resources, Native American cultural resources on site. So there was a lot of coordination with the Salinan and Chumash tribes.
They had a village right there.
There was just a lot of stuff there, you know. And so sort of having to move, reconfigure the layout of the project. Mm-hmm. But then we became victim of the supply chain snarl, and we were months behind in receiving our switchgear, which serves to power your project. At the same time, you have all these supply chain issues. You're also instituting new regulations or incentives to encourage all electric homes, right? Which is great because it reduces your CO2, but everybody wants this all at the same time.
Yeah.
And there's less supply because of the supply chain. So it created this perfect storm where we were delayed by 6 months.
So now you're up and running.
It's up and running.
And what population
primarily? It's family. It's a family project. So we have three types. Mm-hmm. We have family, senior, and then special needs.
And total population?
About 1,000 units we own and operate throughout the county.
But the one in Morro Bay?
Morro Bay is a 40 units. It's all family.
So it might be 100 people? Or
less. Yeah. Probably. Yeah, we have ones, twos, and three bedrooms. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mixture. A lot more we're seeing interest in the one bedroom mm-hmm. or studio. Again, that's back to the senior.
Going forward on that subject, what's your near-term vision for more projects like that?
Well, we are working on trying to close a financial deal for a 50-unit senior apartment on the corner of Monterey in California. This will be eye-popping.
That's that empty field right now?
Empty field. It'll be a five-story facility, which will really change that corner, but mm-hmm. it's an elegant design project. And then we're also trying to do the same closing on a 63-unit right off the highway on North Oak Park Road, Royal Grande.
That doesn't exist yet.
Doesn't exist
empty
yet.
Empty field.
So, we're creating new housing. You know, I know you're talking to me, but, you know, if you talk to people self-help housing who are very much involved in our community, they're kind of building at the same rate. Mm-hmm. So, it's
to see Habitat that. For Humanity.
Habitat does a different model where it's home ownership, and they kind of do ones and twos and three mm-hmm. sometimes 5 to 10 units at a time, but also they're doing great work. And then we also have Paso Housing Authority. They don't do vouchers, but they do build housing.
That are subsidized.
They're focused entirely in Paso. They have about 300 units that they own and operate. So we've got a lot of activity going on in our county, and we try to collaborate together. Mm-hmm. I mean, we compete with each other for funding, but we really try to, where we can, partner. For instance, we're partnering with People Self-Help Housing on a project in Grover Beach, land donated by a family that had been there for many generations. They thought it would be a park, but in talking with the city felt maybe be more inclined or more useful to use that land for housing, and the family agreed. So we're underway a 53-unit family project there, which, thanks to the good work of our team and People's, we were able to preserve a 300-year-old oak tree.
Oh, cool.
That's older in our nation's history, which is really, modern history, that is, and really cool to see that come together.
Rough estimate, what is the homeless population in San Luis Obispo County, roughly?
It's less than 2,000, and according to the most recent point-in-time count, there was a reduction, in the 10% range. It's not a perfect science at the point in time count. You got volunteers go out and, literally try to talk to everybody who's on the street, and you do it one time, every couple of years. Weather can have an impact on the number you count, but...
Would it be fair to say majority of the people that are living in bushes and whatnot are basically there by choice?
Oh, man.
I know.
Yeah, good question. I think, when people say that... Another way to kind of flip that around is like, these folks don't want services. They want to live at, that's by choice. They live on the streets. I think what people fail to understand is that people build community. Like, we are a social species. It may look different to you and I, or we're housed, and our social circles are typically housed too, so it looks different than what it looks like when people are congregating on the streets. But people want to be with people they know and that they trust. And they also may have dogs or other pets that aren't allowed into certain shelters. And then until recently, you couldn't really have a drug addiction or alcoholism and still be housed in a emergency facility. You would be turned out. So I think those things all become prohibitors for people to move out of the streets and into. But with the most recent Supreme Court ruling, Grants Pass, it does provide cities with that tool to ticket people for sleeping in public. And so that may push some of these folks into emergency shelters. We'll see what happens. I mean, I don't know. But as far as choice, there's so many things going on that question, Tom, and I'm not really not an expert.
Yeah.
People should probably just understand is it's far more complicated than you would probably imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we're out of time. I know you have another meeting. Scott, I really appreciate you sharing with us.
For sure.
To learn more about your world, where would you direct us?
Yeah, check out our website. It's haslo.org. You can always email me at scollins@haslo.org if you have any questions, or if you want me to speak to any groups, please reach out to me. Happy to talk about what we're doing. And I also encourage people to pay attention to what's going on at their city councils. We need housing for our folks that are on the low-income spectrum, but we need more housing of all types, and it's important that people share their thoughts and opinions with planning commissions and city councils. My name is Scott Collins.
Scott, thank you so much.
Thanks, Tom.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, iTunes, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer. Please support your local NPR station. I listen to WNYC in New York, and in fact, NPR is all I listen to. If I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.